people come to visit the Church of the Nativity, they don't, during the rest of the year, tend to spend very much time here in Bethlehem, apart from an hour or two visiting the church. They would like to see the hotels full much more often, on a much more regular basis. And they said that that would really improve the economy here in Bethlehem.
The late Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat used to make a point of very conspicuously attending midnight mass there in Bethlehem. Does President Mahmoud Abbas feel the same need?
Yes, he does. In fact, a little bit earlier this evening, he was at the Anglican church service here, and he's expected to attend the Catholic church service, which will take place at midnight in the Church of the Nativity. And this is something that he does every year. It's seen as a sign of solidarity with Palestinian Christians, and it's something that has become very, very regular. So he has a busy evening of church visiting, although he is, of course, himself a Muslim.
Very briefly, Bethany, the number of Palestinian Christians in Bethlehem, in the West Bank overall, going down.
Going down, many who emigrate because it's an easier life in other places. And I think there is a lot of concern here for people to try and maintain their community. One Palestinian Christian told me that they're very concerned that a lot of the land around here is Christian land, which is being now built and taken over for Jewish settlements. And that's something that they're very concerned about here.
Bethany, many thanks. That was the BBC's Bethany Bell in Bethlehem. Time now for My Year, our series where we've invited people to look back at their role in one of the year's big news stories. There's a corporate high flyer brought down by the recession, a leading climate change activist and the youngest ever round the world yachtsman. But we start today with a Somali pirate who calls himself Hassan. Hassan decided to speak to us from the pirate stronghold of Haradheri in central Somalia to explain why he and some of his companions decided to turn to piracy as a way of making a living.
I haven't succeeded in taking anything this year, but I did hijack a ship the year before. I have invested all the money I've made from piracy very wisely indeed. My life is much better now than it was when I was a fisherman. I have a wife, only one, mind you, and some children. My life has changed in a very big way. I do not want to go into the details, but I can tell you clearly that my life is much better now. I went to sea two or three times this year, but I didn't bump into any warships. Some of my colleagues did. They had their guns confiscated even before they had done anything wrong, but they were released. Others were caught and arrested. It can go both ways.
Good morning. The captain taken hostage by Somali pirates has thanked his rescuers after he was dramatically freed unharmed last night.
Snipers from the US Navy killed three of his captors and a fourth was taken into custody.
The pirates have disrupted major shipping lanes and are holding close to 200 people to ransom.
This year has been completely normal. Nothing especially bad has happened to me. You know, I used to be a fisherman, but foreign fishing boats came to our waters and stole all our fish. When they did that to us, we decided to hunt them down, and we are now reaping the benefits. We've done really well out of those foreigners who disturbed our business. We are now profiting from our decision to turn on them. These foreign fishermen have now brought foreign navies to Somali waters, and they are continuing to fish by sending out their trawlers behind the warships. They have even mounted guns onto some of their fishing boats. Whenever we try to fish, they start shooting at us. So we have decided to turn those foreigners into our fish, and we are now fishing for them. All of us pirates have gained financially from this. I can tell you that my financial situation is very good.
The latest weapon in the fight against piracy. No windows and no crew, but this American drone does have an all-seeing eye. Controlled remotely, it heads off from the Seychelles to fly over the Indian Ocean. Its mission, to locate, track and film pirates.
I don't want to change it, but I don't want to change it.
The sea is a very dangerous place, so everybody gets frightened. I cannot predict what is going to happen next year. That is up to God. I will change my career if those foreigners stop fishing in our waters and dumping toxic waste there. I have seen a lot of places where they have dumped containers full of poison. People who live in those areas have had to move because they are terrified of the poison, which is everywhere. A few years ago, there were more than 700 foreign trawlers stealing fish from Somali waters. Now there are no fish to be found. They have left us with nothing. The only people doing well from fishing now are us pirates, because we are fishing for hostages.
This was Captain Phillips soon after his rescue, safe at last on a US warship.
Thanks, Tiger. Thank you very much.
He's said to be unharmed, in good health, his sense of humor still intact. For 5 days, he'd been held hostage in an enclosed lifeboat. The boat had been taken in tow by the USS Bainbridge. One pirate had come aboard to negotiate.
I'm not happy with being a pirate at all. If I carry on like this, I could end up in terrible danger. For now, I'm using my old equipment, but next year, if circumstances allow, I will try and buy new equipment. That might help me capture more foreigners who steal our fish and poison our waters. I will ask the hostages to pay me a lot of ransom money. The exact amount will depend on how the negotiations go. If those foreigners leave our seas and my country settles down, I will stop this life. I don't want to make piracy my profession. All of us want to return to our lives as fishermen. I have become a pirate for political reasons. I use the money I've made from piracy to develop my country. If we get a government that can manage the affairs of Somalia, I will stop this piracy business.
A Somali pirate who goes by the name of Hassan with the first of our series, looking back at 2009, called My Year. Tomorrow we'll be hearing from a New Yorker who lost her job in the global financial crisis and how she coped with that sudden change in her fortunes. You're listening to the BBC World Service. I'm Julian Marshall with NewsHour. And a reminder of our main news, American senators have voted to approve ambitious plans for US health care reform, the centrepiece of President Obama's domestic agenda. And bomb explosions in the Iraqi cities of Hilla and Baghdad have killed at least 23 people and wounded more than 100. The North American Aerospace Defense Command, or NORAD, is as intimidating as it sounds. It was created 50 years ago to track incoming missile strikes. But in the past half century, it's also developed an interesting sideline that really comes into its own at this time of the year. It's trained its radars and satellites on Santa Claus, tracking his progress through the night skies. Over the years, millions of children have phoned NORAD to find out where Santa is. And this being the 21st century, Santa's festive forays can now be followed on Twitter and Facebook. He can also be tracked on NORAD's website using Google Earth. Here's the update from the start of Christmas Eve.
And it's liftoff. NORAD satellites are picking up heat signatures from Rudolph's bright red nose. Santa and his 9 reindeer are full of energy and are ready for the long haul ahead. From the North Pole, we suspect from years past that he'll fly down into the Pacific Ocean, to the coast of Russia, through the Bering Strait, headed south to the Marshall Islands. Even loaded with all the gifts and goodies, Santa's sleigh seems to be moving fast. Stay tuned at NORADSanta.org as we continue to track Santa on his Yuletide journey. For NORAD Track Santa, I'm Tech Sergeant Lucas Bullen.
And on the line now, Lieutenant Commander Gary Ross from Santa Tracking Operations Center in Colorado. The first question obviously has to be, where is Santa now?
Well, Santa Claus is right now in Saudi Arabia, and it looks like he'll be heading up just to the north there to Iraq for his next stop.
You say next stop, so at some point or other he dives down, does he, from the sky?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Santa, you know, has a mysterious way of getting to all the boys and girls who believe, and delivering those presents underneath the Christmas tree.
And traveling sometimes, I would imagine, at great speeds.
Absolutely. You know, the speed is quite fast, and we're still researching how he does it. And so, we're still looking for ways to figure that out.
Now, this is something you now do on an annual basis, but it all kind of started off, as I understand, about 50 years ago by mistake, if you like.
It did. The local newspaper was running a Sears Roebuck advertisement, and Sears had a program that they had a telephone number, and the local boys and girls could call in to that number and talk to Santa Claus. Well, the advertisement was misprinted, or the telephone number was misprinted, and it was actually the Air Operations Center in Cheyenne Mountain telephone number, and Colonel Harry Shoup was the director there that evening, and he had a good sense of humor about him, and he really enjoyed taking the phone calls that evening from the boys and girls here in Colorado Springs that evening, and that's when the tradition began.
And ever since then, you provided this Santa tracking service by phone on the internet, and now by Twitter and Facebook as well.
That's right. Well, our operations center likes to stay current with the times, so we've tried to use all the social media tools that we can, and so anybody who's using those tools can follow along.
Has it ever occurred to you that the possibility of mistaking Santa Claus for an incoming missile?
Well, you know, our sensors are very precise, so we can tell who's what the real threats are, to the U.S. and to Canada. So I think that we're pretty safe.
Okay, many thanks, Lieutenant Commander Gary Ross of the Santa Tracking Operations Center in Colorado. Simplifying your life or downshifting is something that many stressed-out executives have decided to do in Britain and America. But in Italy, a job for life is what most people strive for, and giving up the luxury of a big salary and city life for a simple back-to-nature existence is fairly marginal and even laughed at. So it was a surprise when Simone Perotti not only left a job as marketing manager to become a sailor, writer and cabin dweller in Liguria, but also wrote a highly successful book about it. Adesso Basta, That's Enough Now, became an Italian bestseller. Simone Perotti dropped into the Europe Today, or rather NewsHour studio, should I say, and spoke to our Italy reporter, Emma Wallace. So what about his reaction to the book's success?
We were really astonished at what happened. In 4 days, the first amount of copies finished, in 4 days. Thousands and thousands of people seemed to be exactly on the same line. People 40 years old are discovering that they are not alone, that they are not crazy when they wish to be different and live in another way and choose another kind of life. This is something really astonishing what's happening now.
You talk about on your website that you don't feel shame. You use the word shame quite a lot, vergogna. Why should you feel shame that you've decided not to live in the rat race, as we call it?
Because we are the country of the Pope, we are the country of the money now, thanks to Mr. Berlusconi that made so much to create this crazy philosophy of living. So when you think and then you eventually do something against money, against the work, against this crazy way of living, you feel yourself a little bit crazy, you feel yourself out of trail, and you immediately ask what I am doing. Am I right? Am I the only person doing that?
Because you did live in the corporate culture for many years,
yeah.
So you were kind of trained to want success, to be hungry for success. But do you think that you can only downsize if you have lived a successful life as you did in modern terms?
At the beginning, it seems that downshifting is perfect for people that had some success and that decides at the end to change their life. But what is going on in Italy now shows us that is exactly the opposite, because I didn't have so much success. I just was a manager in a company and a hard work for all my life, but it was enough. It was enough. I won't be 40 years old forever. So I just want to live my life now when I'm strength enough yet to do normal things that can make my life better.
Do you think your life downsized, where you're going on the boat and you're painting houses and you're making food and you're making sculptures and doing all these
I'm
great things?
Writing my books particularly.
And writing your books. I mean, it sounds like a great life, but it also sounds like quite a successful life still. And particularly this book, you've had a lot of success. So have you managed to make a success of downsizing?
But this is a case. This is exactly a case. I'm a writer that leaves, one of the few writers, then leaves with what he writes. And this is authentic. It's not easy. But the success of this book is a case. At the end of the, you know, the normal success time, that is 2, 3, 4 months, on every news, on every newspaper and television and everything, with 1,000 people writing me every day, I will get back to my normal life. That is living in a wood for some months, a year, and then sailing. And it's a simple and unknown and with no name life. The secret is not to have so much, it's to spend less. This is the secret. Life is not so expensive as everybody says. The system and the power says, beware, because the life is so expensive, you don't have to quit your job, because in that case you are in trouble. But that's not true. The amount of money that you can spend to have a real wellness are very few.
You talk about freedom above all else, especially freedom above money. Do you have to be on your own to prize freedom above all else, or do you have a family, and what were their reactions to this?
A direction of my family was at the beginning confusion and astonishment, because, you know, I was, in their opinion, and even in my opinion, I was on the right trail. So they asked themselves, why did you achieve so much and you want to lose everything and to refuse everything? But at the end, they understood, because I'm a normal person, but I'm a concrete person. I don't have dreams that I cannot realize. I generally don't like to dream things that I cannot do. At the end, they followed me. They tried to understand what I was going to do. So I think that now they understood, and they see every day that I'm happier than before, I'm quieter than before, I have new dreams to be followed. So I think I'm more on the right trail now than before.
That was Simone Perrotte, author of Adesso Basta, That's Enough Now. And Roy Fuchs has posted a comment on our Facebook page on our top story, the passage of the health